Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
Time for some NBA basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. No Utah Jazz ball tonight. They're going to make their return to KOAL tomorrow. I know there's not a ton to talk about in the world of the Utah Jazz. There is plenty to talk about, though, in the world of the NBA. And we're going to do that once again. Joining us over the phone right now to have that talk, we have James Holas. He's kind enough to join us each week. James, great to get you back on. I know a lot's happened since the last time you and I have chit-chatted. And there's a lot of stuff to get into. I appreciate it.
Sorry I fumbled the ball last week. You invited me on, and I let work and life get in the way of fun basketball talk. It'll never happen again.
Yeah, it's amazing how life happens, huh? Like NBA basketball is not the most important thing. Kind of bizarre, right?
I mean, I'm going to disagree.
Well, I'd like to disagree. No, I would like to disagree. You know who's loving life right now? It's the Dallas Mavericks, right? If you're a Dallas Mavericks fan right now, James, you have got to be on cloud nine. Here's a team that's sitting at 8-2. They just rolled through the Clippers the other night, putting up nearly 150 spot. They blast through the Pelicans. I mean, we've seen this team score at an extremely high rate. Even in a loss to the Nuggets, this is a team that scored like 115 points. It's got to be fun right now to be a Dallas Mavericks fan.
Yeah, 8-2, one of the best point differentials in the league. They're sitting solidly in third right now behind Denver and Minnesota. Now, as a bona fide hater, I will say that there was about a month last year when the Celtics looked like they were going to set all kind of offensive marks, and Sam Hauser was averaging like 15 a game and making like 4 threes a game. A lot can change the next few weeks. I always say, and me and you've had this conversation, it takes about 20 games, 25 games before a team shows you who they really are. But kudos to the Mavericks. They got a real guy in Lively. Luka looks amazing. Kyrie is not even playing great yet, and they're looking pretty good. I'm still questioning their defense, but you know, hey, the proof is in the pudding right now, you know.
And let me throw a question out there for you with Luka. And I'm not going to take anything away from Russell Westbrook when this guy averaged a triple-double throughout an entire season. However, in my mind, I still always had a thought like, okay, there's some stat padding going on. When I watch Luka Doncic, who right now is averaging 32-8-8, it doesn't come across to me as stat padding. And I'm sitting here trying to word this properly. Right, I'm trying to spell out the visual that I see. It almost seems like it's flow of the game. The way Luka has played throughout the first 10 games, he has been one of the best all-around players in every aspect. His defense still has some question marks, I know, but when you take a look at the way he crashes the boards, the way he's handling the ball, distributing, scoring, this is something that we haven't seen maybe in a little over a decade in the NBA. It's coming easy to him throughout 10 games, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, man, almost 33-9-9. And I agree with you. It's different than Westbrook. It is a little bit, but it's very similar, though, in the fact that every possession almost starts and stops with what he wants to do. Now, he makes the correct read every time. He's getting guys open shots. His guys, you know, they cut or they, you know, they pop, they lift when they're supposed to, and they're taking. So it's not like it's a bad offense. While Westbrook, he's going to pound the ball, and he only wanted to make the pass when it was for the assist. So I agree it's a little different. Which means his offense is probably a little better, better shooters. But it's funny how a guy's averaging almost 33-9-9, and we barely talk about him because there's so much talent in the league right now.
No question. And I think when we look at the depth of Dallas, right? So you mentioned 20 game mark. We're going to say that time and time and time again. There is room for improvement on this roster. There's no doubt. Specifically, when we look at that second unit. That's what worries me a little bit. If you have to rely on Dante Exum to come off the bench and give you a productive 10 to 15 minutes, you got a depth problem. People in Utah can speak to that.
So I'm going to give them right now, Exum's playing a little less than 8 minutes a night. And they do have guys, young guys, like they have that Hardy kid.
Yep.
There's that Green kid. Derek Jones Jr. is a pretty nifty vet. My old guy, my old flame, Grant Williams, is playing pretty well, almost 30 minutes a game. So, sure, there's a pretty good drop-off. You know, I mean, Dante Exum is getting another leash, and he's getting, they're trying to get him to figure things out. But what it comes down to is basically you're going to stagger Luka and Kyrie for most of the game, and they have them both in the game at the end. And that's a pretty good alternative.
Let's stick with the Western Conference for a moment. I want to go back to what Zion Williamson has said. Now, the Pelicans right now sitting at 4-6. They've lost five straight games. I mean, this was a team that got off to a hot start. They were 4-1. I know it was exciting talk. Anytime you talk about Zion Williamson actually playing, it's exciting in a sense, right? He basically sat down post-game and said he is trying to buy in. I don't know if that was the exact quote. Might have been, actually. I don't think I'm paraphrasing. It was along the lines of, I'm trying to buy in. And you could tell that there was obviously a dejected and somber Zion in some sense. This is it for the Pelicans in my mind. I mean, and when I say this is it, I'm speaking now until February before they have to make mass changes because it's not working. And there's obviously a problem within that locker room. That post-game conference was proof of it.
Yeah, man, they are a very curious case. Obviously, it's really hard to judge a team when they're missing one of their three guys, and they're normally missing at least one of their three guys.
Correct.
Right now, CJ McCollum's out with I think he had a collapsed lung.
Yep.
And we don't know. You know, there's no real timetable for him to be coming back. Something about Brandon Ingram. It's weird because if you squint at Brandon Ingram, you see this great NBA scorer. You know, somewhere between Tatum and KD almost with his height and length and shooting ability, but he just never has quite put it together that way, and he's not a defensive impact guy. And he almost feels like an empty calorie guy, where he's going to give you 22 to 25, but you might win by 8, you might lose by 6, but he'll give you 25, and they don't seem very impactful. Zion himself, I've watched a little bit of the Pelicans. He's still incredibly explosive and is this wonder, but it seems something like maybe it's a fraction off, and, you know, a big night for him now is 24 points, not 34. They seem like maybe less than some of their parts. And like you said, something just feels off. I watch them. Their fringe guys play hard. They all seem to play hard, but sometimes it's like a cloud of dust that doesn't go very far. So, they've had some bad losses, and I saw the other day they were playing, what game were they playing, but they were playing them close, and then the other team pulled away in the fourth quarter, and, like, you know, they ended up winning by, like, 15 or 20. So, I know they're still missing pieces. Like I said, CJ has to come back. They're missing that defensive kid on the wing. What's his name?
Well, right now, Herbert Jones is out.
Herb Jones.
Yep.
Jones, sorry, they're missing Herb Jones.
They're missing Trey Murphy as well, though. I think that's who you were alluding to. Trey Murphy's out, if I'm not mistaken.
There you go, another guy. So, yeah, it's really hard to judge, but guess what? This is what, year 4 for Zion?
Yep. Same year as the AD to Lakers deal, yep.
Yeah, so, but hey, it's everything, every roster has a shelf life, and it would suck if the shelf life of this roster was really shortened because of injuries and this weird chemistry.
Again, James Hole is our guest right now as we talk NBA basketball. James, we have to talk about the Utah Jazz for a moment because, again, not a great start for this unit. I think that a lot of people were excited on where this franchise could go, and we know that Danny Ainge wanted to strip it all the way down, and that's exactly what he did. We know they have a ton of assets moving forward. They didn't really cash in any of those assets, something you know about with Danny Ainge being in Boston. But I do believe if you're a Jazz fan, you would look at the front court of Lauri Markkanen, who was outstanding last year, Kelly Olynyk, who definitely earned maybe that hard-nosed, gritty fan favorite role, and then you add John Collins. You look at that front court for the Jazz and you say, okay, that's playoff caliber. Outside of that, Keontae George, Chris Dunn, Jordan Clarkson, these guys have not been good so far this year for the Utah Jazz. What are your thoughts 10 games into the season on what's happening in Utah?
Yeah, you nailed it. Those that front court of Markkanen and your boy Kelly. I like Kelly Olynyk a lot. Very smart, heady kind of player. Him and Olynyk and Collins. I have a kind of empty stat feeling with him too. But he's definitely better than he showed in Atlanta, and, you know, athletic, a lot of potential there. It's the backcourt. Somebody needs to step up in the backcourt and be an impact-type player. Colin Sexton is not that guy. I think we all like him, but he's probably better suited for a sixth role. Clarkson hasn't really found his footing yet this season, and he was almost unplayable earlier this year.
Yep.
You can tell me better, but I feel like he's kind of maybe been a little better lately, but not great. Horton Tucker, another guy, a lot of talent, but he can't translate it consistently. He'd make an eye-dropping play here or there, and then, you know, then obviously the defense is the problem, right, with Utah. Walker Kessler has shown some nice shot-blocking chops, but, like, with one defender on the court, you're not gonna get a lot of stops. George is going to be a nice piece. Now, the panic meter for me with the Jazz is, like, out of 1 to 10 is 2, because it doesn't matter. This is all house money. You're seeing what you got. You're seeing what's going to be for the future. Sure, you would love to win now. 3-7 doesn't look great right now, but this is a rebuilding team. So, I know as people who are Jazz fans, they'll look at this and they might have a little consternation. As someone outside looking in, it's the world is their oyster. The picks, the assets, the great contracts. For the next year and a half, it's all about kind of like you're in the lab, seeing what you got.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I know that in professional sports, it's kind of a what have you done for me lately type deal. Markkanen's averaging like 25 points a game. I think he's averaging just over 30 minutes. He's been fine. I think we've touched on it. It is the backcourt, right? That's the problem. Now, I know Jordan Clarkson did have a bounce back game recently. A couple of days ago, he dropped like 25, 26 points when they beat the Grizzlies, which is something that they need. I guess my question, if we're talking about Jordan Clarkson, you still have 3 years counting this season. And I mean, it's a big payday. I think it's $14 million. They front-loaded that deal, $14 million next year, $14 million the year after that. At some point in time, do you look at Jordan Clarkson and say, okay, fun player right now, easy to root for. I know people in the state of Utah love Jordan Clarkson, but at some point in time, do you at least consider moving on from Clarkson while there's still value there? Because, James, if you're a year or two away, I don't think Clarkson fits into the long-term plans of the success of this unit.
Completely agree. He just doesn't fit that timeline, man. Clarkson is, what, how old is he? He's 31. He still has a valuable skill set, which, you know, on a good to a, you know, wannabe contending team, you bring him off the bench, get you a little 14, 16, 25-point outburst every now and then. $14 million in the NBA, it sounds nuts to say this, it's not a lot of money, right? So you he's probably a pretty movable contract. You might have attached an asset or two, but one thing you thought does not, you know, lack is draft capital. So, yeah, if you got to attach a couple second rounders or something to move him, that's doable. And that's what's so great about the Jazz. Right now they have so much flexibility that a guy like him can struggle. He might struggle this year. He might catch fire this year. But either way, there will be options. He's movable, or because the Utah fan base loves him, you keep him. You got all the options.
James, we've got to move over to the Eastern Conference. I got to get your thoughts on what's happening at the top right now. Philly at 8-1. I think a lot of people are rooting for Philly just because James Harden is so toxic, right? I think any place where James Harden has been, I want to see success, because I don't think there's a more unlikable player in the league than James Harden. I don't have much good to say about the guy. Philly sitting at 8-1, Boston sitting at 7-2. We're seeing some outstanding play by Bam in Miami. They've won 5 consecutive games. Eastern Conference, though, to me right now, it is a 2-pony race. I think it stays a 2-pony race. I don't see anyone touching Boston or Philly in this conference. I don't need 20 games to know that those are the two elite teams.
Being the fan of the Celtics, I'm cautiously optimistic. I might be a little more pessimistic than most because I remember last year when we looked like world beater for the first 20-ish games and then fell off a cliff for the month of December. So, right now Boston and Philly has surprisingly pushed themselves into there. It's worth noting Philly hasn't lost since the trade and the Clippers haven't won since the trade. And I got to agree with you, man. Something about James Harden, I've always said this, he was a soulless basketball player, just joyless and soulless. He was out there churning out points in Houston, and it was this ruthlessly lab-efficient offense where it was just threes and dunks and layups, and there was no kind of joy or fun to it other than whoever likes James Harden and liking his little cooking celebration. So, and now I think that those injuries, those hamstring injuries in Brooklyn have kind of sapped his strength. He hasn't been an elite player for the last 2 or 3 years, and from the looks of it, man, he just – there's a clip of him passing the ball and then cutting in as a Clipper, and he just halfway through the cut, he just turns his head and starts kind of trotting, and it's a turnover. They pass it to him. I am so glad I've never had to cheer for James Harden. Kudos to Tyrese Maxey for taking hold of this opportunity with two hands and really, really holding on to it. He's looking like a future all-star, maybe borderline superstar. And sometimes, man, we talk about sports and talent, all this. Sometimes it's about chemistry, and it could be addition by subtraction. And that team just seems so much happier, and they're clicking, and the guys are playing with purpose and for each other, while James Harden plays for himself.
There's no question. And, you know, look, I'm all for the Clippers making the move for Harden. I was. The reason I was is because, in my opinion, it's desperation time right now in L.A. You went out, you got Paul George, you got Kawhi Leonard, you owned the NBA offseason. And since then, the NBA postseason for the Clippers, it's been disappointment after disappointment. I think we are at the end of the window. I said that a couple of weeks ago when we had you on before this deal went down. I felt this way last year when they went with Russell Westbrook, who played fine for him down the stretch, don't get me wrong, but it just reeks of desperation. And James, if we go back over the course of the history of the NBA, this isn't something that we'd have to look 20 years back. This is something that we could go 30, 40, 50 years back. We have seen franchises who are desperate to get over the top make moves that don't necessarily net wins or at least longer postseason runs. I think we're there with the Clippers. I know it's still very early. They could get this figured out. But what you just pointed out about James Harden, it's lifeless, right? It's lifeless. And when I look at Harden and Westbrook and George and Leonard, I just don't see this working out, man. I really don't.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to think of a time when you put four future Hall of Famers at this advanced age together and all of them like basically play the same two positions, right? These are all point guards, shooting guards, or small forwards at heart. Sure, you could play Kawhi at power forward, but he's not a power forward. So you got these four players who all need the ball in their hands. Two are known as great defenders, two don't defend at all. Three of them are supposedly shooters, but two of them suddenly can't shoot. Well, Russell can never shoot. It's just, and you gave up all your depth. So I wasn't sure if this would be like a do-or-die time for the Clippers, but they just pushed the button. The Harden trade was them pushing the button. They've sped up their timeline, and it is do-or-die. Because if this doesn't work, what do you do? You got four guys who need contracts, you know, they're going. Three of them want max contracts. Only maybe one or two of them deserve it. Like this is a day of reckoning for the Clippers. And so far, it looks like they roll the dice and they're coming up snake eyes.
Yeah, and you know, let me make this perfectly clear. I don't like the Los Angeles Clippers. I don't like this organization. And I think part of the problem that I have with this organization is Steve Ballmer. I think that's a lot of my problem, James. Look, the Utah Jazz just swapped ownership here recently. I can look at what Ryan Smith has done, and I can appreciate it step for step. Steve Ballmer comes across to me as a guy that purchases an NBA franchise for like $3 billion and immediately believes you can just buy an NBA championship. Now, I know in professional sports, that's what you do. You buy the best players, right? That's why it's professional sports. But I almost feel as if it was, look, I paid $3 billion for a team. We're going to put another $3 billion within this roster, and we are going to win. Somewhere along the lines, it's rubbed me the wrong way, as ridiculous as that may sound.
Not to pick on you, it does sound kind of ridiculous because we want our owners to spend.
We do, but we want them to do it with it, like, I guess, a process of it, right? I mean, this guy's been spending money, and this guy's been at the press. Maybe this is what it is, right? Maybe this guy being at the press conferences of Kawhi and Paul George and the enthusiasm, and it almost comes across as fake. Right, I don't know. There's just something about Steve Ballmer. I haven't appreciated the way they've gone about it, and the Clippers have been easy to root against because of that. It's a team that wants to buy relevancy. There we go. That's how I'm going to word it. He's wanted to buy relevancy, and that's not necessarily the way it works.
As we're seeing, that's not how it works because they're in the news for all the wrong reasons. So you're right. But at the same time, I'll say this. I have no problems with sometimes what they say, the process can be great. The operation is a success, but the patient died, right? That's Charles Barkley's favorite thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You have a great process. You can do everything the way that you want a guy to do it, and it just fails. So on the knee and the shoulder and the elbow of Paul George, this is just falling apart. And I do see a little bit what you're saying, though, because they went from this kind of heart and grit team that played hard, and then you added these two guys by trading away a great young player like Shea, and you moved guys like Lou Williams and Pat Beverly that really kind of fought and clawed and got things done, and you bring in these two superstars, and it falls apart. And now you just try to bring in another superstar, Russell Westbrook, which it rejuvenated him, right? That's fine, but then you bring in another superstar, a wannabe superstar, or a fading superstar, and look what you got. Sometimes it's too many cooks, by all reports, the Harden trade wouldn't have happened if ownership didn't step in on both sides, kind of, and say, hey, we're going to get this done. And maybe this is a lesson for Ballmer. He'll be humble. He'll learn, this is why I need to mind my business, you know? So
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure for the few Clipper fans that hear this, they're going to be angry. That's okay. I don't like them. James, let's end with this. In-season tournament, yay, nay. What do you think so far?
Honestly, I'm an agnostic. Because right now it's just the regular season games that count towards something. That's the there was definitely a change in the competitive level. Some of these games have a little more juice, and these are professional athletes, right? You tell them, hey, you're playing for another $500,000. You're playing for a made-up trophy. Guess what? It gets their juices flowing a little bit. So I think that's kind of cool. I don't know if this was necessary. I don't know what's going to that trophy's going to prove. It's going to be kind of weird to see that. I think, the two teams that play in the finals going to have an extra game? Do they count towards stats? I don't know. But to me, I don't mind it. I'm agnostic. It's early in the season enough where everybody's still excited. Now, I think it should wait to hold this tournament till January, February, when in the doldrums of the season. You know what I mean? But it is what it is.
Would you rather have the winner receive an automatic playoff berth than get $500,000 per player?
I don't like that at all because it's these are just, you know, this is a round robin, whatever, and there's like a knockout round. Somebody sprains an ankle and they're playing one of the worst teams, and then somebody gets hot and they get a playoff berth. That's interesting, but you didn't earn it. And I think the big thing about the playoffs is you earn it. You go through 82 games and you earn it, and you grind and you scrap. It's a lesson in endurance and toughness. So I don't like that. I don't think.
Fair point.
Guarantee playoff spot. Yeah.
Fair point. Fair point. He's James Hollis. He joins us every Monday to talk NBA basketball. James, I know you're real active on Twitter. Give you a chance to go ahead and throw that handle out where you talk NBA basketball.
Honestly, man, I'm still at Snotty Drippin. Homage to the great Scottie Pippen. Not as active as I was, but I'm really enjoying the season. As I don't make content anymore, so I'm really just a fan locked in. It's a lot of fun. I was really pulling against the Lakers the other night. Good win for them to pull it out against the powerhouse Trailblazers. So good for them to show that kind of gut.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming, but that's okay. I wouldn't have it any other way. James, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time as always.
Thanks for having me on, man. It's always a good time.
We're going to pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. Again, we are live from the Sutherland Studios, and it's here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.